This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee. We've got the band back together this week from ESPN in West Palm. He's Brian Rowitz, and catch him on ESPN 1000 in Chicago. He is Jonathan Hood. Although you could have also heard him this week on Unsportsmanlike when they did him incredibly dirty on Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio. But we don't need to get into that here about how Michelle Smallman, you know, spurned Jonathan Hood's Bears for, you know, the best franchise in the NFL, the Green Bay Packers. But I digress, because we have a lot of great things to get into when it comes to the world of professional wrestling. And it starts last night.
Hey, Brian, did you hear anything? I didn't hear anything either.
Apparently football started. I don't know. I check out on that stuff. Football's
yeah, I had no idea. So, it must be, I guess, again, the kind of testy headphones. But please, yeah. You were saying something about wrestling?
Yes, you wrestling right here. Right here in Milwaukee last night, we had a contract signing that didn't actually happen because Swerve Strickland showed up. However, Hangman Adam Page did not. Why? Well, he was too busy committing arson. He was burning down the childhood home of Swerve Strickland, and this just continues to build and build and build. By the way, shout out to the Milwaukee crowd last night. Apparently you could not hear on a television, but while the vignette was playing, the crowd was chanting, "This is arson," instead of "This is awesome." It was "This is arson," which, again, good point.
That is what it was, yeah.
Yeah, that's 100% what it was. But that's what this feud has come to. Burning down of houses before we get an unsanctioned, lights-out, steel cage match. Also, that apparently happened not on television. That was just Tony Khan coming out and telling us in Milwaukee, but I digress.
Tony did say in the media call he spent all night trying to keep Hangman out of jail because of the arson. So, you know, busy guy.
Yeah, very, very busy guy. So, that brings us to this question, gentlemen. Is Hangman Swerve the feud of the year?
It is not the feud of the year, but it's a close second. And the parallel between Hangman and Swerve and what's happening with CM Punk and Drew McIntyre are similar in this regard. This is not about a championship. It's not. Now that Swerve has lost the championship, guys, it's really about a blood feud. And I think that makes it even better. Imagine if this happened where the title's going back and forth between Swerve and Hangman. That's not what's happening. It's just that these two just don't like each other. And I love that, because that's really the essence of wrestling. Not about a championship, but I don't like you, you don't like me, let's fight about it.
So that's why I think it's number one. Like, to me, Brew and Punk is up there, Cody Bloodline is up there, but like that hate and that passion and everything we've seen from these two, to where the matches are almost secondary, because if we go off wins, losses, this should be over. Swerve's already got the wins there, but we still want to see another one this weekend. And to me, that's why I do put it top of the list.
Yeah, I still think, I'm assuming, Hood, you think Cody Bloodline is the feud of the year?
No, I think that it's Punk and McIntyre, because this thing will
really?
Never end.
Punk and McIntyre above, because I think Bloodline, Cody, like, again, that was just so good. Again, with the real life elements that were, you know, sprinkled in, then The Rock doing all the things that The Rock did to kind of elevate that. I've got that as the feud of the year. Plus, by the way, I also don't think it's over. I think we're revisiting, maybe it's a different version of the Bloodline, but Bloodline Cody certainly is not over. And I think we're going to get, you know, in the last quarter here of the year, we're going to get a revisit of that feud. But to me, Hangman Swerve is a very close second, because again, when you get somebody burning somebody's house down, yeah, that's elevating it to quite a different level.
This has topped the breaking an entry and leaving a shirt in a baby's crib. Like, this is another element. This has topped the drinking of the blood, and who the hell knows what happens this weekend?
You know, what's interesting, Brian, is that with both of these feuds, we're talking about Punk and McIntyre and Swerve and Hangman, it leaves it up to the opinion of the audience to figure out who's the babyface and who's the heel. What you just laid out about Swerve and Hangman is true. Like, so where's the babyface in this? We got a burning home on Wednesday night in Milwaukee, and before that we had a breaking and entering while a child was sleeping in a crib. And but somehow, some way, Swerve comes out to be the babyface in this. Is Hangman the babyface now that he's sitting on a couch with a house burning behind him as he set the house on fire with the gasoline can? I mean, I think that that's what's interesting. It's like the audience has to choose now. Which side are you on? Same thing with Punk and McIntyre. that is not a given that, well, you know, that McIntyre is the heavy and that Punk is just the baby face. Well, I mean, there's some that feel the other way, feel like Punk shouldn't be in WWE, and they agree with McIntyre. So I just think that I'm glad that we as the fan have the voice to decide who we want to watch and who we want to root for. But either way, it's very intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, there was a group of people walking out of the arena in Milwaukee last night chanting Swerve deserved it, you know, because, again, the breaking and entering, leaving a T-shirt next to your, you know, next to your infant child. Like, there was going to be escalation down the line in this feud. And again, like, I just think that I think we all saw, okay, like that house isn't long for the world.
Yeah. When
in the middle of the day yesterday, you know, the video came out on social media of Swerve, like, oh, hey, this is my childhood fam, you know, childhood home, really dreamed of always buying this thing. Just, ooh, that house is not, ooh, that's not going to be standing by the end of the night, is it?
Oh, I think that's the wrestling fan mind. Like, literally watching Dynamite last night, like, they're showing the Swerve thing where we bought the house. My wife's like, oh, what's going on? I was like, oh, we bought his childhood home. And she's like, oh, that's so sweet. I was like, yeah. I was like, I don't know how long that's going to last. And then later I had to nudge her. I'm like, oh, look, there's the house. It's in flames right now. So, you know, it adds to the story.
It came across so wholesome from Swerve Strickland. White meat baby face,
yeah.
Almost, you know, tear inducing, like, oh, man, this is family's home. This is great. And you got Nana behind him swaying back and forth. And just the idea, here's the deed and all that. And then here comes Hangman Page. Boy, my jaw dropped when I watched that last night. I'm like, what the hell is this? Boy, the sports entertainment was heavy on that segment last night, and it was great.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, I feel like Hangman, I think Hangman has to win Saturday, and then does it continue? Like, how does this actually end?
Yeah, fight forever.
Okay.
It's a fight forever situation. I'm in for fight forever here. You can reheat this whenever you want, and it's going to be really easy to reheat. I believe this is going on last. I believe this is what's going to end up main eventing All Out, which, again, kind of just telegraphs that, oh, yeah, Bryan Danielson definitely is not losing to Jack Perry, because whenever that happens, that will be the main event of whatever, you know, Dynamite, Collision. Maybe they bring back AEW Dark for it. Who knows when Bryan Danielson decides he's going to lose. But, this thing is going to main event, and it should be the main. This should be the main event.
Yeah, I don't think there needs to be speculation. So there were reports this weekend that it was going to main event. There were stories circulating. Swerve quote tweeted one and said, main event of All In and All Out. So I guess that's him confirming, yeah, we're going on last this weekend.
So we're clear. So the audience is clear. This is a Steel Cage Lights Out match. Yep.
Okay. Unsanctioned match. Yes.
Unsanctioned
Tony,
match.
So Tony Khan came out last night, apparently after Dynamite went off the air. Hey, that was crazy. Can't believe it. Obviously, this has gone to a level that, you know, we cannot sanction this match. So this is now going to be an unsanctioned lights out match.
Okay. So for our younger viewers and listeners, the lights out stipulation back in the day would be you'd have a card and then the promoter would say, we have nothing to do with this match. Our hands are clean. Whatever happens, happens. If someone is going to go to the hospital, we got nothing to do with it. So what they would do is they would shut the lights out in the arena and then turn them back on to give the declaration, hey, the card's over, but now here's this match at the end. This is Tommy Rich, Buzz Sawyer all over again. This is their blow off in the Omni, where they cut the lights off, turn the lights back on. Okay, whatever happens, happens. We got nothing to do with this. There's no rules, whatever they're going to do. So I think that that's usually in the cage match, that's usually the blow off. And I feel like there's still more.
Yeah.
I think I want more after Saturday.
Didn't AEW do this with Mox and Kenny? Like that glass table spot, like wasn't that one of those like unsanctioned matches?
It was.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Like Mox's first match. Yeah. It was like unsanctioned. They've done a couple of these unsanctioned things before.
Yeah. I will say credit to AEW. Like we've talked a lot about the quick turnaround from Wembley to Chicago, and at least they pushed it back a week. You look at this card, and I'd say half of it has some heat behind it. Obviously led by this one, but MJF and Daniel Garcia. You'll hear from Daniel Garcia today. Stat and Willow, like even Ospreay and Pac, I feel like is a little bit behind it. I'm impressed by what they've thrown together on this card.
Yeah, and again, they gave themselves the extra week to do it. But you know, again, it was, they clearly are doing better at having a longer term vision, because Staten Willow's been going on for a while. Right. Daniel Garcia, MJF, goes back months, and granted, then they waited to reheat it at All In and have Garcia come back then, you know, to step up to MJF. So you didn't need that much over the course of the 2 weeks to really get that thing hot and ready to go. This thing obviously goes back months. So they're doing a better job of having a longer term vision of what they want this to look like, which is how you could do something kind of like they've done. Now, again, is everything on the card perfect? No. Jack Perry versus Bryan Danielson. Cool. That doesn't really get me super excited.
I mean, well, look, you know, to your point, Gabe, and you're correct. This is much better storytelling than they've had in quite some time. When the internet wrestling community says that they don't tell any stories and it's just boring, no, they're telling stories. They're doing a better job of it. When you're a 5-year-old company, you're going to have some peaks and valleys of trying to be able to keep this thing on the road. And I think that they've done a much better job with that. The main event, or one of the matches, it's Danielson against Jack Perry, is akin to Kevin Owens and Cody Rhodes. There's no reason really for the match. They just tied it together, as you saw on Dynamite on Wednesday. It's like, you know, Jack Perry had a nice promo. Absolutely. Yeah. He told his story, but it's just a 1 week thing. So it's kind of like, hey, Danielson needs a dance partner. Jack, you do it. When you know damn well it should be Okada or something like that. Well, it's something more spectacular than that. But I mean, I get it. I get it. That's an opponent for Danielson.
Yeah, and I think, isn't Perry like the last one to pin him or something like that? Like, you have that going also. Like, there's a little something there. I think Christian would have been better in that spot. Like, that's a way you could give, like, his title shot, get out of the way. Him only having 2 weeks to heat something up would have worked. But I think that's fine. The tag match is going to be fun. That just got added last night with Claudio and Yuta. But,
yeah,
I mean, you got stories that they're telling, and I'm very impressed by how they've done it.
Yeah, it's very odd to have an all-out and not have Bro, it's in the house watching college football while the event's taking place.
College football's over. It would have worked out better this year.
Well, that's what happens when you lose to Boston College, I suppose. Let's move on to the other top three stories in the world of professional wrestling. We like to call it the three count here on GKW. What's number one this week, Brian?
Right over to the WWE, Cody Rhodes in an interview with Inside the Ropes says that if people knew the real plan for him at WrestleMania 40, they'd be even more angry. So let's speculate a little bit. What was the original Cody Mania plan?
Well, I'm assuming it didn't have him in either one of the main events, right? Like, he would have been doing something off to the side. So one of the things that we were speculating at the time was Punk and Seth Rollins. And I think Punk Seth would have ended up main eventing night one, and then you'd have had Rock Roman main eventing night two, and God knows what they would have had for Cody. I mean, it really wouldn't have mattered whatever they had for Cody. So I think Meltzer was kind of hinting at that on social media earlier today as well, that maybe this is what he was talking about, because before Punk got hurt, that was the plan. So that's where I kind of lean, is that he would not have been in any of the main events because they wouldn't have had really anything for him.
Oh.
He would have been one of two things. The first match on Saturday or Sunday, or host of WrestleMania.
God,
I mean, I think that ultimately what would have pissed people off is, after all this with Cody, Brian, he just wouldn't have been in the main event picture. He would have started off two of those shows.
And that's the thing. I don't even think if it was him, Rollins, and maybe him losing to Rollins, I don't think if that would have satisfied people. Because, like, we have seen that so many times. That was such a big story the year prior. Like, it is amazing that they almost bungled this so damn bad.
Well, again, I go back to them. I mean, if you knew Rock was coming back, which apparently they did, you don't have Cody win the Rumble.
Right.
Like, again, that's the misstep of this whole thing. If Cody doesn't win the Rumble, because Rock had already come back earlier in January, said, orders the Rock sit at the head of the table. The crowd goes wild. Everybody's popping all over the place. And then Cody won the Rumble. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess he's going to fight Roman, because that's the only thing that makes sense, because Cody won the Rumble. If Cody doesn't win the Rumble, if they don't make that booking decision, I don't think anybody revolts.
Correct, because that's the thing. Like, I was in the arena in Tampa at the Trop for the Rumble. Everyone was bummed out at the end of the Rumble because you were waiting for The Rock. Like, because of those seeds planted, like, all right, Rock's going to come out, win the Rumble. We get Rock Roman. Everyone would have been okay. To Cody's point, I don't know if everyone would have been that angry. If Rock wins the Rumble and it's Rock Roman and it's Cody whatever, I don't think people are as pissed. I think people are pissed because you had him win the Rumble and then do mm-hmm. the, like, nah, you go get him, champ. Like, no, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I would agree that if we rewind the clock and it was Rock Roman, who's mad at that? Because right. family against family, Rock puts Roman over and then Roman continues. But I would also say this. I'm glad it worked out the way it did, because under Vince, it would have been that. It definitely would have been Rock Roman. And then the narrative from guys like me would have been like, oh, you're screwing a Rhodes again. You screwed the dad out of the world, the WWF championship. It was three W's at the time, back in the late 70s with Superstar Graham. Goldust was never going to be around the world title situation. He was IC champion, but never, never at the top of the card with that gimmick. And then now you're going to do this with Cody. That's what the first thing I would have said on GKW is that you're screwing a Rhodes again. And so, but I'm glad it worked out the way it did.
Yeah. And honestly, that feels like the whole like Jericho KO, where you had all the great stories and it was the second match of a Mania and that was like Jericho's last draw. I feel like that Cody would have been the one pissed off and it would have been pushing him towards the exit again.
See, there's situations like that that makes me think that Cody would have found a way to get back to AEW. And I think that's going to happen anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a situation. I mean, what have you wrestled Gunther? We've gone after the IC title?
Oh.
So then Cody Gunther instead of Sami Zayn Gunther?
That's on the table.
That's his moment when in the IC. Because like even him Punk, like, where do you go heel face in that feud if that's the direction they had went?
Well, no, because I mean there were so many other directions to go with Punk, right? Like, because again, if Punk doesn't get hurt, I think it was pretty clear that they're gonna go Rollins, but then he gets hurt and they end up pivoting to the McIntyre stuff, which ends up being fantastic as well. Again, another just right. Two things, just really changing the course of WWE 2024 history and really going forward, Punk getting hurt and Cody winning the Rumble. Like, yeah. Those two things are different. Like, I have no idea what that WrestleMania card ended, really ever looking like.
Yeah, because I don't know if we get to Punk Drew off of that, because it's Punk and Rollins all the way up to Mania, if not after Mania. Maybe Punk's champ in that regard, so then you don't get Priest's champion. There's a lot of what ifs there that really changed the course of things.
But without Cody being in the mix to be able to finish the story, all that stuff would have been disappointing to a lot of fans.
Mm-hmm.
Under Triple H. Again, under Vince, it would have happened, guys. Cody wouldn't have been in either main event either day if Vince was still booking. That's because Vince wouldn't see Cody as that. He likes the idea that Cody came from AEW to his company. Oh, it's just a great story, pal. But still, he would have him at a certain level in the company.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which we saw the Mania before.
Right. Where he was in the main event, and you had a shot to finish the story, and they just didn't.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm with Jay Hood. I'm glad it worked out the way it did, because I was one of those people that was disappointed that Cody won the Rumble again. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess we're going to run this back. And without The Rock coming in, seemingly taking the spot, and then having everything turn, like, this is probably – that run by The Rock was probably my favorite run of his since he left WWE full-time. Like, it was classic heel Rock. It was so good. It was so much better than what he did when he came back to face CM Punk. When he came back and won the title and came back against John Cena and did the two matches against Cena, I thought it was really, really good, classic, over-the-top Dwayne The Rock fun. And I thought it was – I think it ended up working out, honestly, for everyone. Because now we're on – I mean, if The Rock gets that match at Mania, that's probably it. That's probably it for Dwayne. You know, he retires or whatever. Now I think we're at least getting two more matches out of The Rock. Because he still has to face Cody, and he's got to face Roman.
Well, I feel like hearing this and seeing the way things played out back in April, and even seeing the current run that we've been sort of down on, and Cody as champ, does Hunter believe in Cody? I'm sure he believes in the merchandise sales. That's doing great. But does he believe in Cody as being the guy?
Well, that's going to be a topic for a later show. you put on the lower third here on YouTube is Cody the guy? We have lived this for a long time, haven't we, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it is Rey Mysterio, whether it's Chris Benoit, whether it's CM Punk, whether it's Bray Wyatt, where they get the championship but not really the guy. I think that Cody
Daniel Bryan,
but I think that Cody is the guy, but as a placeholder until The Rock comes back. And you could tell that by the booking. Like, they believe in Cody. I mean, I'm sure that, like, he's one of the reasons why that a lot of these arenas are filled. Mm-hmm. People want to do the whoa-whoas. They want to be able to cheer him and all that, even though the matches are fair to Midland.
Mm-hmm.
Does he get flipped? Do him and Roman get flipped over to Raw at the beginning of the year? Because right now it makes sense, right? Like, I mean, Cody and Roman, that is, I said, I think that's the feud of the year, Bloodline versus Cody. There's a reason why it's on SmackDown. It's on network television.
Right.
That ends tomorrow night. After tomorrow, SmackDown goes over to USA. And then January 1st, I think Raw goes back to being the biggest show because it's on Netflix. I think it becomes the biggest show in WWE on Netflix versus SmackDown on USA on Friday nights. And I think they have Cody and Roman on SmackDown because they're the two biggest stars, and that's the biggest show.
Between now or until, you know, when SmackDown goes to USA, for the rest of the year, it's going to be Raw and SmackDown both on USA Network.
Yeah.
Until we get that main event.
Yeah, there's no roster split. There's no roster split there.
No. I mean, it'll be Mondays and Fridays on USA the entire time, which is pretty cool. But I think we're going to get to, Gabe, your main event. Or the big match you want to see, the first match on Netflix, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, you do Rock and Cody as the first thing to draw people to Netflix. And look, I mean, again, I look at that first Raw on Netflix, it's basically a PLE for WWE. It's behind a paywall. It's the same thing as Peacock. It's just a different paywall that you're paying for now if you don't already have Netflix. Like, why not treat that first Raw as a big deal to try to get people to, you know, give their money to Netflix so they tune in for that first ever Monday Night Raw on Netflix? And I think doing Rock Cody there makes a ton of sense. Rock Roman, whatever one you don't want to be the main event of WrestleMania 41.
I mean, look at NXT. Like, we joke about the CW, but they're treating that as a big deal. Like, Punk on one episode, Orton on another. Julia's debut is going to be on that first CW one against Roxanne Perez. They've made such a big deal about her signing. CW, you get her. Like, they're treating it like a really big deal.
Yeah, I mean, WWE's doing, they are cashing some checks, man. They are in a good stride here going into 2025. But from Netflix to being still on USA, keeping those ties together to the CW and, you know, having these PLEs internationally, they are really cooking with gas.
I mean, we'll have it later in news and notes. Apparently an NBC December special coming in December. Prime time on a Saturday.
Yeah, see, they're doing well, man. This is the National
WWE Battle of the Belts, baby.
Yeah, this the NFL of wrestling is right there. The WWE, no question about it.
Yeah. What do we got at number two this week, Brian?
On the other side, we saw CM Punk on Monday call out Gunther before being attacked by Drew McIntyre. Reports of those two planning to be a main event potentially Survivor Series. Gunther and Punk. When we see it. Should Punk go over Gunther?
I lean towards no. I think that Gunther is going to be given a lot of runway here. You know, we've seen this with Hunter. He wants these champions to have long reigns, and I just don't think that would be a long enough reign. Punk doesn't need a championship. Punk is one of the best. And the reason why I have always gravitated towards CM Punk over all these years is because he has told the best stories. Like when CM Punk was in that last run that he was in WWE, the Summer of Punk, you know, when he cuts the pipe bomb and he goes from that, but he genuinely told the best stories, which is why he was always one of my favorites until he eventually left. When he was in AEW, he told some of the more compelling stories that AEW had. He doesn't need a championship. It'd be nice if you want to give him another one, but if you're going to give CM Punk a championship, I think it should be in the main event of a WrestleMania. Like, I think that's the one thing that he really wants. Been WWE champion. He's done all of that. I think he wants to main event a WrestleMania. So whether that's winning the Rumble in January or whether that's him earning that spot, I don't think he needs it. I think Gunther needs it more. Would it be fun to watch? Yes. Would I be worried about Punk surviving? Yeah, a little bit. But it would be entertaining to watch those two, but I don't think he needs to go over
them. I just think that because of this battle between McIntyre and Punk, McIntyre will not allow Punk to go over Gunther. You know, he realizes this is
fight forever,
this
baby.
This is Peter Griffin against the chicken on Family Guy. This is what it is. I mean, these two are going back and forth, and you know, it will continue. The feud will never end. And it's great too, by the way, because the storytelling has been great. The reason, Gabe, that I like Punk and McIntyre as the feud of the year at this point, if I had a ballot, is because of the work that's been done outside the ring. While Punk was on the mend, McIntyre kept it going, walking through the streets of Chicago, trying to find the bakery in which he was eating those, all those donuts or whatever.
Getting the picture with Jack. I mean,
That's all part of the feud. And so even whenever we get that match, if we get that match with Punk calling out Gunther for the World Heavyweight Championship, McIntyre won't allow it to happen. Like the finish, I call the finish. McIntyre will find his way in there and screw Punk, and then they're going to fight again. And it's something I'm not tired of. One thing about these stories that we've been seeing, whether it's WWE or AEW, as long as it's written well, I'm here for you. I got a bowl of popcorn, I got a beer, and I'm watching every week because the thread is to keep it interesting, to keep it going. It's not necessarily about five-star matches. It's about five-star stories. And I think that we're getting that with the McIntyre and Punk.
Does it add anything to have the title involved, though? Like, we got Punk Drew at Mania for the title. Now the bracelet's destroyed. Does that add to it at all for you?
At some point, if we get there, yeah. But I don't need it. I don't need it today. Around Mania, yeah, I'll get it. Sure, okay. I got no problem with it. But at this point in time, like we started the show talking about these personal issues in AEW and WWE, and some of them don't have a title around it. The most interesting stories right now don't involve the World Championship or a championship.
Which is crazy. And to your point, Gabe, like, can WWE trust Punk to be a champ? In terms of durability and being available?
Not against Gunther, because that's how you can kill him. Die.
It's gonna be tough too, because the injuries that he's had. I mean, I was thinking back about his strap match and was looking into more of that leading into that, you know, the last time he had a strap match in AEW, he was wrestling a lot, like a lot more in AEW than I even thought. It probably led to the injury, so I think they can be more careful with him. But quickly going back to the bracelets being destroyed, shout out Joe Tessitore. He was fantastic. Clearly had done his homework. Clearly watches the show very much. I mean, in the little videos that he did before and after Raw that they released on social media, he's obviously a fan of the product. Like he said, you know, I was a fan tonight. I'm only going to get better. I can't imagine what that looks like, because I thought he was really damn good. And maybe it's just because he's Joe Tessitore. He's done Monday Night Football. He does college football playoff games. He's done major fights for ESPN and boxing. The man's voice carries a certain gravitas and just gives you an instant. And this is, I'm saying this, and this is no insult to Michael Cole, because he is fantastic and one of the best to ever do it in pro wrestling. But by inserting Tess as your second one with Michael Cole, like Tess just like raises it a level, because he's coming at it from a world of being one of the best in a lot of other sports and doing a lot of these big time events, that just instantly hearing his voice every Monday is going to raise what you're doing, you know, in terms of how much you're paying attention to Monday.
Tess was in that booth as if he's been doing it for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Because the on camera is he turns away Barrett and just like with the hands and just kind of like talking to the audience and then talking to him as if, you know, I've been here for a while. And when it's your first day, you know, so there's a guy that's firmly entrenched in the stories, knows some of the moves, you know, needs a little primer on some of them, got to update a few of these things. They're like, that is the right call, but they call it something else, Tess. All right, I'll write it down. Like he's, you know, I like that. I think that, you know, that's what I like. But I just, from the beginning where he got into the Denver fans, like he's talking to Broncos fans, and I got the crowd into it. There's something about his aura that's always been interesting to me as a broadcaster. When he gets excited, it's kind of down here where he's just kind of telling the story. And then if there's something big, boom, he explodes. And that's I love that about Tessa Torn with him calling football.
Yeah, the dastardly Drew McIntyre destroying the bracelet and shoving it into Punk's mouth. Like, again, he raised it another level because he knows the assignment. He is a part of telling the story that you're watching, and he added to, again, on its surface, breaking like a little, I mean, how much does that bracelet cost?
Maybe.
$3, right? Like on the surface, this is the dumbest thing. It is the dumbest thing. And it is so awesome. It is so great that two grown-ass men are feuding over it, and Joe Tessitore is so into it that he is just aghast and appalled that somebody would break this and shove it into another man's mouth.
You're muted.
True moment. And you can tell it's Drew. He goes, it's Drew McIntyre, as opposed to, who is that man? Who is that in the hoodie? Is that a fan? Like, he just flat out said, oh, that's Drew McIntyre. But, like, at the Tessitore level, I'm like, I appreciate that.
Yes, because it's common sense. He's right in front of him. Who do you think it was? Sheamus? I mean, he's right in front of him. It's a really excellent point. It is. I like him being in that scenario. Here's the thing that I would ask to WWE, and I'm glad it's happening now, not under the Vince regime. Do not take it out on Tess because he's not Michael Cole, because that's usually what it works in WWE, right? Michael Cole had to deal with this with Jim Ross. Well, you're not Jim Ross enough. I thought you didn't like Jim Ross. Well, you're not Jim Ross enough. So we want you to do all of Jim's catchphrases, Michael Cole. And so Michael had to go through that. And so my hope is that he doesn't have to go through what Vic Joseph had to go through or Jimmy Smits or anything. Let Joe Tessitore be Joe Tessitore. Everything that had to sound the same. Let him be himself.
Well, just think about any other sport that you know, with the NFL starting. You know, Joe Buck doesn't sound like Jim Nance, who doesn't sound like Mike Tirico, and, you know, doesn't sound like, you know, Kevin Burkhardt. Like, everybody has, you know, their own A team that elevates the broadcast, and they all do it differently. Not everybody has to. And again, that's what I was trying to say, no disrespect, because Michael Cole is fantastic at this, especially ever since Vince left and got out of his ear and let Michael Cole be Michael Cole on the broadcast. Like, him and McAfee are fantastic together. Like, it's a bummer that they don't get to work together as McAfee's doing his college football thing. But Tess is just different. And that's good. That's a good thing that you can differentiate and have somebody that damn good and have two really good announce teams. And again, and that's no disrespect to the work Corey Graves did either, because I thought Corey admirably stepped in to the play-by-play role on SmackDown. But he's going to be better off, Cody's going to be better off working with Michael Cole going forward, you know, until McAfee comes back. Like, I think this is going to be great.
Yeah, win-win. I think the way you can really push it over is to somehow get Booker T off NXT as you're shuffling everything around, and then everything's better. Just throw that out there. Little idea for you, Hunter.
He speaks jive.
He's.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, we had an opportunity earlier today. Brian and I had a great chance to catch up with one of the men who's going to be featured heavily on Saturday, and that is Daniel Garcia, as he gets ready for his match against MJF at All Out in Chicago coming up on Saturday in Jay Hood's neck of the woods. Here's our conversation with Daniel Garcia. Excited to bring our next guest in. He is going to be taking on MJF. Big time match happening at AEW All Out in Chicago on Saturday. So if you are in Jonathan Hood's neck of the woods, make sure you check it out in Chicago. Daniel Garcia. Daniel, thank you so much for jumping on GKW, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Well, so let's go ahead and start with this feud you have with MJF. I am a fan of it because you guys have been able to heat it up so quickly, and it can be tough when you have two pay-per-views this tight together with All In and All Out. And yet it feels like, because the feud that you have with MJF predates and goes back a couple of months ago, I really feel like, you know, this is something fans can get invested in heading into the show on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I don't think it's heated up quickly. I think this is something that has been in motion for, you know, months. He's somebody that pretended like he had my back. He made promises to me that he didn't keep, and then he turned his back on me and tried to end my career. And I came back and I ruined the biggest night of his life. And I keep I'm obsessed with, like I said, it's like my new passion. Like, I love ruining stuff for MJF, and I'm going to continue to ruin stuff for him until he can't take it.
Take us back to that week and a half ago. You pull the hoodie off, Wembley reacts. What is that feeling like when that many people are reacting to seeing you out on the apron?
It's a crazy feeling. Obviously, I was at home for like 6-7 weeks. I wasn't on the road, so I didn't see a crowd for a long time. And then I didn't really even see the crowd until I went out, because they had me like hidden in like a, I was hiding in like a hallway to keep it a surprise so they couldn't see me. So, you know, I walked backstage with my mask on and my outfit on, and then I walked out and I saw the crowd for the first time and ripped it off and, you know, saw everybody's beautiful faces and heard a great reaction. It was definitely a moment I'll remember forever.
How tough can it be to keep some of those secrets in pro wrestling today, especially when you're doing an international show and you have to fly overseas? Because it always seems like somebody, you know, is tweeting out or throwing on somewhere on social media, oh, hey, I happen to see so-and-so whenever a big return is anticipated. I didn't see anything anywhere about you potentially being there. So how were you able to keep this such a good secret?
That's intentional. You know, it's very, very hard to keep a secret in wrestling. And, you know, a lot of times the best way to keep a secret, it's just to tell nobody. Keep it to yourself. And, you know, that's kind of what you have to do sometimes. And there are ways you can kind of, you know, move secretly and find your way around not having to see anybody in the city that you're in. And I took every precaution that I could possibly take in order to keep this the best secret as possible. And I think it paid off.
You know, you talk about your family a lot and what they mean to you. What is their reaction when you tell them about some of these moments? When you say, hey, there are 50,000 plus in London that are going nuts for me. What's their reaction to stories like that?
I brought them with me.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't just something I had to tell them. I said, no, you guys are going to come to London with me. It was nice. We stayed an extra day Monday, too, so I didn't have to walk around London with a hoodie and sunglasses on trying to not be seen. I brought my mom and my sister, and we were able to like see Big Ben, do all the tourist stuff. So we flew out Tuesday. It was really nice.
Awesome.
But he mentions that. Let's talk a little bit about your wrestling family, at least, because we're big fans of Daddy Magic Matt Menard here on GKW. We've had him on a couple of times. What is your relationship with him like? Because ever since the breakup of the Jericho Appreciation Society, he's always seemingly having your back.
Yeah, he's somebody, when I came to AEW, we were just kind of thrown together. I didn't really know what to think about him and Jeff. I thought they were, you know, like, just these, like, goofy guys. Like, I didn't really know what to think about them. I didn't really have an opinion on them. But our relationship has just grown so much over time. When you're put in these crazy situations together where it's, like, do or die in your first couple weeks of being in a company, it kind of forces you to grow a relationship. Like, shared experiences is what grows relationships. And we've just had so many shared experiences together of intense moments and intense pressure over the past 3 years. And, you know, he's somebody who's never left my side, has never faltered, has never, like, wilted at all in his support for me. And, you know, I have his back no matter what. He has my back no matter what. I love being around him. He's someone I can trust 100%.
You know, he talks about him being on the show and our maybe 20 to 30 minutes total with him. We still have stories we talk about from just talking to Daddy Magic. What are some of the moments you've had where you sort of shake your head and like, what did he just say? But inside, you know, you're laughing hysterically.
I mean, it's something different every week. I mean, you hear the stories. Like, he is, I think, the funniest person at AEW. He's hilarious. He, you know, never misses an opportunity to make a good joke, you know, and that's what I love about him. He doesn't take stuff too seriously all the time, but he knows when to take stuff seriously. And I think that's a good balance. Like, that's a perfect friend, somebody who can, you can laugh with, but you can also be serious and have actual real conversations with about real life issues. And that's somebody that matters to me.
So when we start talking about you and your growth then in AEW, talking about, you know, kind of having the serious, the unserious moments, obviously you're in, you know, Jericho Appreciation Society, the sports entertainment aspect of that versus the serious side. Have you been able to find a balance of that as your career has continued so far in AEW?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just playing the role that you're put in. And a lot of people, I feel, are scared to play their roles. Like, I was scared to play my role at first, too. Like, they tell you, hey, we want you to be a sports entertainer. I know you've been a serious wrestler your entire career, but we're going to put you in the stable with Jericho. Like, be a sports entertainer. Let's see what you got. And at first, I was kind of just trying to, you know, do the same old stuff that I was doing. And I could tell I wasn't fully committed to it. So, you know, the people weren't going to be fully committed to it. But once I just said screw it and dove headfirst into it, started doing the dance, started wearing the leather pants, that's when, you know, I bought in, and that's when people started to buy in as well. And I feel like a lot of people, like, we see this with, like, a lot of wrestlers. I feel like they're not fully invested in what they're doing. And I think it shows. So I think you have to be obsessed with and fully invested in what you're doing and do that to the best of your ability, whatever role you put in, and then people will connect with it.
You've had so many moments. You're only 25, but already Jericho, PWG, beating Bryan Danielson. What's been the most surreal moment of your career so far at only 25?
Honestly, I think it's probably winning PWG Battle of Los Angeles. I think that was like that was a crazy day. Like I did it with food poisoning. It was insane. Like I think that's like the most unreal, I can't believe this has happened moment that I've had in my wrestling career for sure.
Wow.
Wait, you won Battle of Los Angeles with food poisoning?
Yes.
That can't be doctor recommended.
I ate it at so we had first night, I wrestled Kevin Blackwood night one. Then a bunch of us went out to eat to Joey's DTLA in downtown LA. We went to eat there and like we were eating everything. Like we got like sushi, chicken parmesan, we got like everything. And anybody who ate something that like wasn't vegan, we all got food poisoning. So I got food poisoning for the next day. I had to wrestle like three matches, and one of them was like a 30-minute match with Speedball Mike Bailey. So it was a task, and I think that's why I look back on that night so fondly, just because it was something so difficult to get through, but I got through it, and I did my best, and I delivered. So I think that's why I think about it so highly, because it was so hard.
You are, as Brian mentioned, so young, so early in your career. You've had the ROH Pure Championship. What other goals do you have for your pro wrestling career?
Man, I mean, the goal that I've had for probably the past 2 years, it's really a goal that only one person can do, is I really want to be the person to retire Bryan Danielson. That's something that I really want to do. To me, that would mean more than any title, any accolade. I feel like that's the biggest notch in my belt that I could ever get.
Yeah.
And that is my main focus, and that is my goal.
You know, your name right now is one that's in headlines, where you're going to be, what you're doing. How do you process that when everyone's rumored and talking and speculating about your future? How do you process that?
I won't lie. I mean, it can be difficult sometimes when every time you open up your phone and it's somebody assuming something about you and your life, not even just like your career. It's like it's real life stuff that people are assuming about. So sometimes it can be a little difficult, and it can get into your head, and it can like make you just like question everything, and it can be frustrating because you're like, where is this information coming from? Where are people getting this information? So honestly, it can be a lot to process sometimes. But I think if you just, you know, move with integrity, stick to your guns, and have full belief that, you know, that you're doing what's right and that you will do what's right, I think that's what matters most. I think if you do that, it can be easier to block out the noise than if you're not.
I want to go back to Bryan Danielson. Why would that be such a crowning achievement for you?
I mean, he's my hero, obviously. He's somebody that is my favorite wrestler of all time. He's somebody who is my childhood hero. And I never thought I would even have the opportunity to wrestle him. And I've wrestled him, you know, in different combinations of ways, probably like maybe like 7 times now, like including like tag matches and like big matches and stuff like that. And I feel like I don't want to see him retire. I feel like it's sad that he's retiring, but he said the next match he loses, he's retiring as a full-time pro wrestler. So somebody has to do it. Like, why not me?
As a wrestler and a fan, how do you watch Bryan matches now? Like when you see what him and Swerve do at Wembley, how do you take that in?
I mean, it's incredible. I think Bryan is the master of wrestling in more ways than one. And I watch him and how he's able to adapt to different styles and have so many different matches with different kinds of people. It's crazy. Like he has a match with Will Ospreay and it's one kind of match. Then he has a match with Swerve and it's a different kind of match. Then he wrestles Minoru Suzuki and then wrestles Jon Moxley. It's like he can just blend his style and weave it into so many different other styles of wrestling. It's really incredible to see. And I think that's something that I try to do as well.
What do you think you've learned from him being able to work with him the last couple of years? Because we were just also talking about, you know, you being a serious wrestler. And when we're talking about technical wrestling, obviously Bryan Danielson gets mentioned. I'm in Milwaukee. I was there last night, Daniel. And again, the Yes chant, which has been going on for over a decade at this point. I mean, that's as sports entertainment as it gets. You get the crowd behind you. What are some of the things you think you picked up from Bryan Danielson?
I feel like I've been picking up stuff from Bryan since I was a kid. Like, you know, you just never stop learning. And I think he's taught me more than he realizes in a lot of different ways. I'll leave it at that.
You know, big one this weekend, obviously, against MJF at All Out. Jeff Jarrett told Fightful he thinks this match is a crossroads for you. It's a big, whether you win, you go one way, whether you lose, you go the other. How important is Sunday's match to you?
I mean, I'm sorry. I think this match is a lot more important than people realize. I think, you know, you said Jeff Jarrett said that. I think that's, you know, perfect way to put it. I think that this match is means everything to me. I think a lot hangs in the balance of this match personally and professionally. And I need to walk away from this match with a win. It's a non-negotiable for me.
Is this the most personal feud you think you've had?
This is the most hateful feud that I've had. Most personal, I would say, would be the stuff with Brian and Jericho, because that was a war for my soul. It felt like, it really felt like who makes the decision of what Daniel Garcia's future will be. But the thing is, that was somebody making a decision for me. Jericho wants me to go one way. Brian wants me to go the other way. This match is me making a decision for myself. And I think that's the biggest part of it.
Yeah, you talk about being a fan. We see all the time Tony Khan's a fan. What's it like working for Tony Khan?
It's great. Tony's a great boss.
Awesome.
What do you think when you see AEW? Because, again, we see it all about – there's a lot of negativity, it seems, around AEW. But what I see, man, I see you guys doing what you did at Wembley. I see the announcement, you know, of All In coming up in Texas next year and going to Globe Life Field. When you see that negativity, how do you just kind of chuckle and laugh it off, or how do you process that?
I mean, the negativity – I feel like it's not even real. I feel like sometimes I see these negative opinions and it's like AI generated. Like it doesn't even feel like a real opinion that somebody can have. Like, are there valid criticisms about AEW? Yeah, sure. There's valid criticism about everything. But I think like the majority of the negative comments, it's just to, you know, hate on the challenger brand. And I think that's wrong, because I mean, I don't think it's not wrong. You can do whatever you want. Yeah. But if AEW didn't exist, a lot of people in wrestling would be making a lot less money. A lot of people in wrestling would not have jobs. And a lot of people who cover wrestling would not have jobs, because hating on AEW feeds a lot of mouths. So if AEW wasn't around, a lot of people wouldn't have food to put on their table. You know what I'm saying? So AEW being around for people is a net positive in every single way. Like, there's no negative in the world of professional wrestling that AEW being around causes. It's only a positive.
Let's bring it back to a positive of food. You talk negatively about food and food poisoning. What's the go-to meal when you go home that you look forward to the most?
Man, I eat pretty much the same stuff every day. Like, I would say, like, when I get home, like, I make my smoothies every day, like, when I'm at home. So when I get home, I just really miss those. Like, when I'm on the road, I'm like, dang, like, I really miss making my smoothies. So
really?
I love my smoothies. Like,
what are in these smoothies that make them so good?
It's nothing special. It's just, like, I like making them. Like, I do, like, strawberry, banana, blueberry, protein powder, peanut butter, like, milk. I put everything in there. But it's just, like, I really miss them. It's, like, part of, like, my nightly routine. Like, I take my shower, I do my skincare, and then, like, I'll make my smoothie. Then I'll just, like, you know, do whatever I got to do. So I don't even know if it's necessarily about drinking the smoothie. It's a routine thing for me.
So
I just like having it.
Yeah. Part of the relaxation routine. I get it, man. Well, best of luck coming up this Saturday.
I just love smoothies, personally.
All right.
Well, you know what? We'll see if we can get you a good smoothie recommendation for when you're in Chicago. Yeah. Coming up Saturday night for AEW All Out. Make sure you're checking it out. Bleacher Report, Triller TV, pay-per-view. Daniel, thank you so much. Best of luck against MJF.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, Hoodie. Any smoothie recommendations for our guy, Daniel Garcia, when he's in Chicago?
He's really looking for it.
Sure, you can come to the house before he goes to the arena. I'll make him one. Daniel Garcia, after all. So, sure. What a very interesting conversation there.
He had a lot to say.
Let me just, I know we got to move forward, but let me just say this. One of the things that stood out to me about the conversation that we just had with him is, it's like, how important this match is.
Yeah.
So what's really at stake for Daniel Garcia when he loses to MJF? What does that mean in AEW? What does that mean for his future? We don't know his contract status, but I just thought that the look on his face and the answer he gave us about how make or break this could be for him, this match coming up on Saturday, that tells a great story.
Yeah, to me, I go back. You can go on our YouTube page and find it. One of our very first interviews ever was with Johnny Gargano when he was a free agent. And there was a lot of speculation where he was going. And we all looked each other after the interview and said, he's going back to WWE. Like, it was obvious in talking to him and the dreams he had. To me, hearing that answer, I feel like we know which way he's going depending on the result of this match. I feel like if MJF wins, Garcia's gone.
And kind of feels that way.
Yeah.
It kind of feels that way. Whereas if he wins, now he's got the momentum and maybe he gets that dream match against Bryan Danielson, excuse me, to potentially retire him, which, by the way, I, you know, pitched here
a week or two ago,
just saying, you know, how that would be fun. What are you looking at, Hoodie?
Last week, that was his guy. He said Garcia, take a chance at a world champ. He said Daniel Garcia. And there you go.
Yes. And on the same show, I said what's best for Bryan Danielson is win the championship, and the next time he loses it, he'll retire. Okay, Daniel Garcia. That'll be interesting to see the AEW championship on NXT.
Hey, the man's got a smoothie. He's got a lot going.
Well, I mean, we've got TNA champs showing up next week on NXT. Why not have AEW champs show up on
the
NXT?
CW Everybody's hanging out. Jeez, you know that. The CW equals stars.
Wouldn't that be something? So that was Daniel Garcia against Joe Hendry for the AEW championship. How'd that happen?
On the CW.
On the CW network. You know, wrestling has strange bedfellows in 2024. Who knows?
Right? What do we got at news and notes this week, Brian?
All right. We just had a WWE PLE. Well, the next one will take place October 5th in Atlanta with Bad Blood. And there'll be a new start time. 6:00 advertised start time. This is reportedly to avoid conflict with UFC 307. That is also that night.
Not shocking if TKO owns both, right? They're hoping that they have some sort of crossover between the pro wrestling fans and the UFC fans. So they want to make sure that everybody is able to watch if they'd like to. It makes a ton of sense. It's not shocking to me that it's starting early.
Yeah, get to the strip club and get your wings and your strippers early.
There you go.
In Atlanta. So that's always a positive for everyone that wants to go down there. You can just tell that they are kind of hand in glove, the UFC and WWE. You could tell. Yeah. Along with that, just as an aside, we saw, about 24 hours ago, Brian, about how Titan Tower is going to be sold. So I don't know if that means they're going to another place in Stamford, Connecticut. But we have heard rumor about WWE having an office in Las Vegas.
Yes, there's a large UFC facility out there in Vegas. I feel like they might have roommates coming soon.
So it's very interesting times.
Other WWE shows, according to WrestleVotes, WWE is set to announce a live primetime special on NBC. Reports say it would take place in December. No location announced yet, but tickets expected to go on sale soon.
Is that the tribute to the troops? Tribute to the
troops, yeah.
Saturday night main event.
No.
Nope. Okay.
Tribute for the troops. Yeah.
Okay.
That's always around the house shows.
That time every year.
That's what the house shows are called on Saturdays, the Saturday night's main event.
Well, put it on NBC. In between the end of college football and the start of the playoffs. Why not?
I think that's right, Gabe. I think it's tribute to the troops. This is the NBC special that the Saturday Night Live will be in rerun, so they put that in place of the reruns right there. That's what I think on a Saturday night.
And by the way,
head to head against Collision.
More WWE money being thrown around. Randy Orton revealing this weekend he has signed a new 5-year extension with the WWE. He'll be 49 at the end of the deal.
He looks great. He looked great on Saturday in Bash in Berlin with Gunther. He's fantastic. It's been fun seeing the different iterations of Randy Orton throughout his career. He's reached a point, and we've said this before, but I feel like he's got one last, you know, heavyweight WWE, you know, championship run left in him. I don't know when that comes, but it's fun watching him be the grizzled, you know, vet who isn't taking himself as seriously as he once used to.
You know, it's funny, Gabe, I saw an interview, the sit down with Michael Cole before Bash of Berlin. Mm-hmm. And even today, it is difficult for Randy to go out there as a babyface. You know, like, he's embracing it now because it's like, before he had to be forced into it by Vince. Right. Smile, goddammit, smile, you're a babyface. He would do like this in Gorilla, smile, goddammit, you're a babyface, that kind of thing, right? But I think that he's embracing it more because you see how the audience gets behind Randy Orton, they sing a song and all that. And so I think that he's good with it now, but boy, he's still having a hard time understanding, like, hey, man, we know that you have an evil side, but that can't come out now because people love you.
But, man, that heel run's going to be great when he turns on Cody.
Oh, man.
Oh, can't wait. Ooh, oh, he's going to try to punt Cody's head. It's going to be fantastic.
You know, it's there.
Involved somehow.
It's funny because he doesn't have to change. And that's funny, guys. Like, he's not a dumb babyface. He's still Randy Orton. He's embracing the crowd now. But, I mean, he can wrestle the same way and just do the punt and spitting on guys and win another championship. That very well could be in the cards.
And finally, news and notes. Swerve Strickland revealed at Wembley that he has signed an extension with AEW. Well, reportedly, one of the most lucrative in wrestling. It places him in the same range as both Okada and Mercedes Moné. Dave Meltzer reported WWE apparently upset with the deal and that AEW is, quote, willing to overpay market value.
Yeah, I'm sure the Giants thought that the, you know, Eagles overpaid for Saquon Barkley too. Like, I whatever someone's willing to pay you, that's what you're worth. And if the other side's not willing to match, man, that's tough. But yeah, look, I'm always going to be pro labor in this situation. Like, pro wrestlers getting more money, that's good for them. And yep. I am never going to be mad at it. I'm never going to be siding with WWE if they're trying to pay less for their talent.
Yeah, I don't know if that report's true. I mean, Meltzer gets it from WWE. Again, I have not heard that. But one thing for sure, whether Vince McMahon is in the chair or if it's Triple H, the WWE loves to be petty. Mm-hmm. Loves to be petty. You know, the WWE will make it seem like that they're just like a little box store, like a little five and dime corner store compared to AEW. Oh, I can't believe the AEW would overpay the big, powerful AEW. This has been going on. This song's been going on for way too long. I'm tired of it. Like, you are the NFL of wrestling. You're concerned about what AEW, the other brand, is paying Swerve Strickland. Why does it matter to you? You had Swerve Strickland. You didn't want him. You thought he was too old, couldn't do anything with him. Let him cook in AEW. Who cares what he's getting paid? You can't have everybody. I mean, they fumble the ball on a number of wrestlers in free agency. So let the other brand, the challenger brand, let them be able to work, or let them go be the indies, or let them be in Japan. WWE can't get everybody.
Perfectly revealed on Twitter that WWE tampered again, that they reached out while he was still under contract. Like, hey, don't you want to come over here?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. A lot of these wrestlers that they let go, they want them to have them back because they're flourishing and making good money in AEW. Well, you know what? I'm good over here. I don't need to go over there if I'm an AEW talent.
Quickly, before we get to matches of the week, did you guys happen to see the McMahon trailer that came out?
Yes, I did, sir. I did. One question I have about it is that this is going to be produced by Bill Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I need to know, let's just be fair, I need to know how accurate this will be. Because from what the trailer showed, it looks like they're going to be able to delve into what's happening right now with the Janelle Grant story, the allegations. But how deep will they go? David Shoemaker is part of The Ringer. David Shoemaker was part of the Andre the Giant documentary. David Shoemaker said that Andre the Giant went on a heel run before coming to the United States. Andre the Giant was not a heel coming into the United States. And that was almost the premise of the whole documentary. Shoemaker saying, you know, Andre was a heel before he came to the United States. He was not. So I hope that it's accurate because that wasn't in the Andre documentary.
So I worry, like, seeing The Rock, seeing Austin, seeing Hogan in this, I worry that Vince is going to come off likable in this. And the Janelle Grant stuff, all the bad stuff, is just sort of a note at the end. Like, and by the way, he did this also.
If they somehow make Vince likable, I don't know how you accomplish that.
Gabe.
Wrestling fans, despite the reaction he would get when No Chance in Hell would hit the speakers.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestling fans, I think especially at the end, universally disliked Vince McMahon.
Yes.
So I don't know how you make this man again, his legacy is complicated. He's the one who built WWE into what Jay Hood has been calling throughout the course of the show, and he's right, the NFL of professional wrestling. Like, this is the biggest thing in pro wrestling. Like, his vision to get WrestleMania off the ground. All of those things happened. He's also a garbage human being. Those two things both can be true, because they are. And I'm hoping that this documentary reflects that.
Brian, the other thing about it is, I want to know how accurate this is, how far they will go, because as we all know, WWE and Netflix are married to each other.
Yes.
How much can you dig into it, knowing that in January Netflix and WWE will be an entity together?
And so many of these guys have still that blind loyalty. Like, Cena got ripped for his comments on Howard Stern, where he literally ripped Vince and was almost complimentary. And I feel like a lot of those comments are going to be the same from these guys.
Cody kind of danced around it again,
right,
in Bash in Berlin after when they did the scrum after the PLE. So
if this turns into the Eric Bischoff who killed WCW, where Bischoff is just looking off into the air, the sky, and his horses and all that, like, he had nothing to do with killing WCW, I'm gonna vomit.
I mean, Hogan had no creative control, so it wasn't him. He used his creative control.
Okay,
that's enough.
Hogan's had himself a hell of a week. We don't need to get into the other thing he said.
You want this podcast to go another hour? Let's just move on.
let's just move on to the matches of the week, shall we?
If you want to shoot with the audience, like, we had a chance to have Hogan.
Yeah, we should have backed off on that one. Yeah, we're good.
No, thank you.
No.
So, want to shoot the audience? Yes, we had a chance to have Hogan on the show, and Gabe,
you're dead.
Gabe, yeah, the leader of this thing, completely put the kibosh on it and told me good reasons why, and I agree with him. So, Punky, if we're gonna go back to Bash in Berlin, let's go to Punk and McIntyre. Mm-hmm. For me, that was the best match on the card.
100% agree. And, you know, we talked about it last week of, I was really curious to see how this would go. We know that Punk can deliver in a strap match, and WWE, it'd been a while since they had one. So I thought this would really stepped up. It really came through. It really hit all the right notes, I think.
The one complaint, I don't love the whole red light, green light thing.
WWE's been doing that for years.
I know, and it takes away. And I mean, maybe I haven't seen it in a while, so it was just jarring to see it. Like, I love that. That was it. Other than that, great match.
You have you're anti-light, isn't that?
Yeah. Wait, because you're like, oh, I don't need these lights. I can keep track of if they've touched all four corners. Yeah. I don't need your assistance.
Hey, Brian, that's how it was in my day.
Hey, Brian also doesn't like the yellow line signifying the first down in football broadcasts. So
it's very confusing when you don't read them. It's not there. Come on, just people.
I understand. Listen, I remember the Indian strap match, if I can still use that phrase, and matches like Punk and McIntyre, where yes, you could take account of 1, 2, 3, 4, because the crowd would call it out.
We can count to four. Wrestling fans can count all the way to 10. Come on, give them a little more credit. They hit the turnbuckle.
No, we can count down from 10. I don't know if we can count up to 10.
No, when the punch is in the corner, they can get to 10.
Oh, okay. You know,
it's 11, but 10 got that covered.
Okada against Kyle Fletcher. I thought that Okada was wrestling at 3/4 speed. Mm. We haven't seen the best of Okada yet in this company, and he's just in a rocking chair right now, because he gave you a couple of drop kicks, gave you some moves, but this is far, far away from New Japan. This is This is a different guy here.
Are we going to see it this weekend? Like, it was potentially him and Takeshita in the ring together in a four-way.
Brother, that should turn the heat up a little bit, shouldn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
So, go ahead.
Live, in person, the six-man from yesterday was very good as well.
Really?
I really enjoyed the six-man.
A lot of action.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It was all over. It was spectacular. I was sitting second row. I thought that really delivered. The Blackpool Combat Club and Pac versus Ospreay and Orange and Kyle O'Reilly.
I'll throw one out there. It was a thank you to Shawn Michaels. I watched them on NXT No Mercy this weekend. Roxanne Perez versus Jada Parker. Jensen Beats, shout out to down here in West Palm. Those two can go. Julia, we're going to see her on the CW in a few weeks. That'll be fun also. Roxanne Perez is a star.
For those that are just looking for something to watch on Triller TV, the TNA Heavyweight Championship, it was Nick Nemeth, the champion, taking on Josh Alexander in Louisville, Kentucky. It took place last Friday. 60-minute Iron Man match.
Wow.
Really good. And did you wonder if Nick Nemeth can work? Yeah. He barely had a sweat after 60 minutes.
I don't wonder if he can work, but you know, I think I already knew that one, so I may have to go check that out. I have not, as much of a fan as I was of his, and disappointed as I was in his run in WWE. I have not done a good enough job keeping up with everything he has been up to since he left the company. So I need to go check that out, because I that man can work. He is one of the best in-ring performers. And he's so underrated, it's criminal.
Yep.
It was a TNA Emergence in Louisville. It was a tremendous matchup, 60 minutes. And it wasn't like all over the place either. Good, solid, quality wrestling. Josh Alexander, also a great mat-based wrestler. They tore the house down. And neither one of them had a heavy sweat afterwards. 60 minutes is not what it used to be.
No. One more throw out there from Monday. It turned into Dragunov versus Dragon Lee, but the triple threat match that started with Dominant also. Like, Dragon Lee and Dragunov just getting time to work was fun to watch.
I'll watch that one fall 30 minutes.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good stuff.
Get no problem with that. Yeah. A lot of great things to dive into again this weekend with All Out in Chicago. If you happen to be in the Midwest, go check it out, or check it out on pay-per-view. Make sure you check out our YouTube page. We've got some videos that Brian is putting up from my adventures last night at AEW Dynamite. So make sure you check that out. YouTube.com/@GoodKarmaWrestling. Check out all those videos, all our past shows, all the interviews like the one we did with Daniel Garcia today, all available on our YouTube page, YouTube.com/@GoodKarmaWrestling. Check out All Out. We're excited for everything happening in the world of professional wrestling, and we're going to talk about it all next week right here on GKW.